This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Ramya. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI's on-air community, and everyone's invited.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. We're starting again. I'm Kelly McDonald.
And I'm Brock Richardson.
He's filling in today. Rummy is not available today to do the show with us. So, Mr. Brock Richardson stepping in and doing an adequate job. Second day on the job. Sir, yesterday, how'd it feel? Thumbs up on it now that you've had time to digest, as they say?
Just because I've now got my feet wet. So I know what's going on now.
So Brock does our sports on Mondays. And as we moved, did the transition to television, we, of course, asked all the contributors, just changing the timeline a little bit, when to get content into us so that we can be prepared. Sports being one of those oddities that we have on the show where up to the minute of airtime, this guy could be adding something to the script. How do you temper that, Brock, with what we do here on the show and our timelines?
It's what Kelly and Ramya get and the team is a very generic script. So what they get is what's going on in any given sport. So it's a very, like, you know, one line, a couple of lines, unless I know, okay, we're going to cover this topic, that topic. But it becomes very generic because, as you mentioned, the world of sports is ever-changing and ever-evolving from day to day and minute to minute, really.
That's really amazing. And it's got to be a tough one, Brock, sometimes, because you know how much you want to say, you want to do, and what you send us today is going to be so different. So you got to keep up on and knowing, okay, I'm going to take these guys here since I've mentioned Tom Brady and his second retirement. When I speak about it on Monday, we'll see where it's at and following up. So fedora's off to you and our whole team because everybody's faced with it and some have a bit more of challenges than others. Let's take a look, ladies and gentlemen, and see what's coming up today on the program. Coming up on today's show, is there a right or wrong way for doctors to break bad news to people? We dive into this topic with our bestie from the UK, Fern Lullum.
With Valentine's Day coming right around the corner, what can you make for your special someone on that day? Foodie Mary Mammoliti comes to share some delicious recipes to try on that day.
Oh boy, that'll start our second hour off, folks. Be waiting for that. And also on the roundtable this week, we're joined by Greg David, communications specialist at AMI. So it'll be a good conversation. Got a few interesting things for Brock and he to talk about with I. We'll get into that later on in hour two on the program. An Ontario study finds that the pandemic brought on a spike on health-related alcohol visits to the hospitals, both among people with a history with drinking problems, as well as those who are confronting drinking problems for the first time.
The study published in the Canadian Journal of Public Health looked at data for visits to hospitals and doctors between March 2020 and May of 21. Lead author and Ottawa Hospital family physician Dr. Daniel Myron found a 22% jump in visits to physicians, including family doctors and addiction medicine specialists.
Yeah, the pandemic and its stresses and its disruption to treatment caused increased harms in people who were struggling pre-pandemic, but it also caused people who didn't have a history of alcohol visits before the pandemic to newly develop them.
Myron says increased availability to alcohol during the pandemic while other services were closed may have influenced people to drink more. Karen Rebo, The Canadian Press.
As a mild drinker all my life, I'm not going to say I didn't sit down ever and, oh boy, throw a few pints back. Brock, I remember when the pandemic started being absolutely floored. What do you mean the liquor stores, the beer stores are going to be open? And of course, it had to be pointed out to me, hey man, think about people with addictions. You just can't cut people off. And my concern was, no, so true. I understand that. But what about people stressed out, upset? And as we know, often you turn to eating, you may turn to drinking. This report alludes to that. Now, there's absolutely, at this point, no evidence in the sense of stats that, that will back that thought up. But I must admit, I was very concerned. And I don't want to be someone who appears to be insensitive to people who have that battle every day and have and are working at it, or people new to it discovering, I drink and this is becoming a problem. I certainly don't mean to be insensitive and say, well, I thought that would happen. But it was a huge concern for myself when those announcements were made. How did you feel?
I wish I could say, Kelly, that I'm surprised by what we just heard. And unfortunately, I'm not really that surprised. And the reason is because the pandemic took a lot of toll on everybody. Everybody had their challenges. Everybody had their concerns. And I think we all just need to be a little bit more aware of what's really going on in someone's life. And instead of, you know, looking at the liquor store and saying, oh, it just opened and there's already a line, instead of judging, maybe let's take a look and say, well, maybe there's a reason for it, and it goes far beyond the desire to go to the LCBO or any given liquor store just because.
Well, I know as a big guy, you know, I do what I can, but that's been a battle for me all my life. And I hope people, you know, don't just look and see and judge. And again, if you're that kind of person, obviously you're going to do that. Just like if you're going to close your mind mm-hmm. to the liquor store being open and just say, oh, well, it still doesn't matter. Cut them off, you know, and be insensitive like that. These are the things you hope that people don't want to be as a person, and hope that we do broaden ourselves. We'll step aside for a couple of moments, ladies and gentlemen. When we return on the program, Michael Fair has checked out some of the popular habit tracking and task management apps that are out there. He tells us about some accessible options. We'll get into that conversation. So stick with us right here on Kelly and Ramya.
Don't miss a minute. Kelly and Ramya will be right back.
Haven't heard from you lately, ladies and gentlemen. We always love to hear your feedback and messages, and when we can, even play one over the air. But just nice to know you're out there making a book recommendation or just letting us know how you feel about the show. And I know some people have been doing that over there on Instagram, on Twitter. Really nice, but we'd love to hear your voice. So maybe you leave us a voice message some point to do that. But any way you engage with the program, at Kelly and Ramya on Twitter, awesome. Brock Richardson, he stepped in today and filling in. We welcome him to the show. And at this point, ladies and gentlemen, on Thursdays, we get a chance to talk audio entertainment and tech with Michael Fair.
Audio entertainment and accessible technology are increasingly important in our lives. I'm Mike Fair, here to help you make the most out of your devices. We'll share tech tips and product reviews. Plus, I'll steer you towards the best accessible games, audio dramas, and podcasts. We'll talk about it all here on Kelly and Ramya.
Mike, I absolutely love the direction you're taking right now as we enter the new year. And there's so many of those things that we've been talking about on the show, people starting this, stopping that, or saying, I can't do that. But really thinking about, as we get into a new year, things I need to change to do a little better and make myself feel better. So at the start of the year, there's always that increased interest in apps to support that and help you. These were to help you keep your resolutions and achieve some of the goals you might set. Now, folks, Mike Fair has checked out some of the popular habit tracking that's out there and task management apps. He's going to talk to us a little bit about accessible options that may be out there to us. Mike, welcome back. And I know as a blind person, we're the first to say, well, some of this stuff can be quite hard. What makes it hard for us?
Well, there's a couple of things, really. I mean, first of all, when you're looking for these apps, it's usually because some aspect of your existence needs a bit more order or a bit more coaching, help. And, you know, you're not in typically coming at this from a position of utter calm and sanctity, right? So, and then we have to look at how hard is it for most sighted people. They can look and find, oh, here's a list of 23 different apps that are, you know, going to be good for habit forming or whatever we need. Mental coaching, it's all available, but some of it's not accessible. Developers don't always think to make it accessible with VoiceOver. And so we might find an app that sounds really good, but then find that, no, for some reason it's not accessible. We can't use this. And that can be really doubly frustrating when you're already stressed about something. you know, trying to just find something that'll help you plan your day. And it feels like your wants are so simple. And yet, the you know, what you find is advertised as very simple. But of course, it's advertised as simple because it is for sighted people, not necessarily for blind people. So that's the minefield that we have to deal with.
Oh, good old putting everybody in a box and saying this works for everybody. Mike, let's talk about the Fabulous app. It sounds fabulous. Am I right?
It is. This is an app that is designed to be, if you want the Cadillac experience of developing habits, this has got the science of Duke University behind it. They have a lab dedicated to the study of this there. And it's an app that puts all the resources possible behind your development of good habits. It starts you small. Drink a glass of water. Will you commit to drinking a glass of water tomorrow morning now that you've done it today? It takes it in those small little starts and builds you up, right, to other parts of the morning routine and daily routines that you want to incorporate. Kind of coaches you all the way through. You get bits of story, messages, things like that, to all the tricks, positive sound feedback, visual feedback to reinforce good habits. And they just pull out all the stops. So that's essentially, in a nutshell, what the Fabulous app is.
So what does this app cost, Mike?
It is, you get a week free trial. So they let you take it for a test run, which is good, especially for us. And you get, it's $58 Canadian per year, which is kind of, it's lower than a full app like Headspace would be. Mm-hmm. That was like up in the 80 plus dollars per year. So this is a bit lower than that, but it's the same kind of idea. It's got to be worth it to you to build good habits, right? And go through their whole program. And
what's interesting to me, Mike, is the involvement of the university on it in the creation. And some of those things, I think, can surprise us because you think, well, there's so many people looking into working on. But then you always ask the question, oh, well, how come it's made this way? Or this is something that might be reasonably usable for us with low or no vision.
Yeah, you know, and they've got the science backing it up, and they've spared no expense in terms of resources. Like, you've got good sound audio in this, the stories, the, you know, the little insight messages that you go through, little, almost like little documentaries on habit forming at each step of the way of your journey as it builds. It really encourages you to interact and be thoughtful when you're using this app.
And so who would you recommend the app for then?
Well, this is for the people who really feel they need some serious help with habit forming. Like, I haven't had any luck keeping my resolutions or doing what I want to build into life. And I want something to really help lay the foundation. And that's what this app would do, right? It's got all the, it's intrusive, right? It'll notify you. It'll, you know, you have to go every day to do this, do that, check off that you've done what you've done, and to progress through the program. So it uses a carrot very effectively to sort of pull you along. And that's what you're paying for, basically.
Okay. What about the Streaks app?
That is a whole different approach. That is a simplified end of the spectrum. You basically get this app, and it keeps track of up to 24 tasks, that either habits that you want to do or bad habits that you want to try and break or lessen, right? Like, say if you want to drink no more than 3 drinks a week, you could set that up so that it automatically presumes that you haven't had a drink, but you have to have the discipline to tell it, oh, I just had a drink. And you might say, okay, I'm allowed up to 3 drinks. And if I go over that, then I miss and I end my streak. It's all about streaks. So if you go through a day, you know, one day of exercising, 10 minutes turns into 2 days, and you check that off every day. It makes a little reward sound when you do that. And so you build up those streaks, and you don't want to lose that. Oh, I've got a streak going of 30 days. I don't want to miss a day and break that, right? So it's a simple psychological mechanism.
Yes. What an interesting take and a way to work on you.
Yeah, you know, nothing to it, really. Just very simple. You could do this yourself if you have the discipline. You don't even need the app. But it's a real good, well-laid-out app. and works reasonably well with voiceover. And you can just add in, you know, complete good habits or bad habits. You have to tell it, you know, it does rely on your discipline, of course. It doesn't,
and honesty.
It can't stop you. Yeah, it can't stop you.
No fibbing to it, Michael.
Exactly. So it's all on you. And if you have the discipline, you really want to change, you know, sometimes these little nudges are all you need to really do some powerful stuff. And that's kind of what's behind this app.
I was just going to say sort of what you had said about the fact that, you know, sometimes all we need as human beings is that knowledge that something is holding us to account, whether it's a person, yes, a piece of electronic, it doesn't matter, because if you break it, you're like, oh, but the piece of electronic, you know, I broke my streak, darn. And,
yes,
you know, even though it's not someone physically saying it to you, it's telling you
in your
this
head,
way.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it gets into your conscious. Yeah, and your conscience totally has to propel this.
Can we talk a little bit about the cost of this app?
Yeah, it is a little cost. It's only $6.99, and it's a one-time payment. It's not a subscription. So it doesn't get much cheaper in this space than that. You know, you get the full Streaks app, nothing blocked off, nothing held back, and you can just start using it, and it'll just keep working.
Yeah, and again, you get into, when you talk costs, you just hope, guys, this is for people's help, well-being, you know, we got to watch our prices. But unfortunately, with the work and the investigating and keeping the app up, this is something that has to be, these things have to be kept up. You know, you're going to end up paying that little bit more. Let's talk about your structured app. What does it do?
Yeah, this is, if you find a full calendar too much, this is kind of an app that takes a day at a time, really brings the focus down to that day. You can scroll back and forth to different days and different weeks and so on. So it's not, you know, just that day, right? But your view is that one day, and you can then go, it takes the whole day and blocks it out. This is the time you have. This is when this event is. You can move events around and have the times change and stuff. You can do anything like that. There are icons and stuff, so it can very visually, you know, good for sighted people. For us, it works with voiceover. The developer even says right in the description that he's put in effort into doing this, and it has paid off. It works very well with voiceover. And so we can use this and have our whole day just laid out. And breaks in between events are shown too. So it says, okay, you have 6 hours between this event, right? And you can use that to sort of judge, you know, when you have your space for mental break time and things like that, right? And helps you just pace out your day.
You know, and going back to simplicity too is all we need. We talked about it in the above, you know, someone to hold us account is helpful too, but simplistic is really what works for most people. I know for myself, I need it right in front of me, black and white. None of this, you know, weeding through this or that or what have you. Just give it to me day by day, and so that I don't get overwhelmed. Can we talk about how much the structured pro subscription costs?
Yeah, the structured, the regular app is, you can use it for free. It'll keep working, and you'll just be missing out some features, like being able to put in recurring events and sort of more things like that. So it would require you to do a bit more work to use it for free, but it's possible. Unlocking the pro version is $1.99 per month. So that's not much. And it unlocks the recurring events. It unlocks a bunch of other features that sort of give you more choices of icons, of how to display things, of different things you can do. And it supports the app's continued development. So you're basically, you know, investing in something that hopefully is helping you. And, you know, for a lot of people, it seems to be more than worth it. So yeah, it's another one of these really popular things.
Paying for the development too, it's just, again, so crucial. Who would you recommend for this app?
Anyone who, the more I read about it, the more I found that a lot of people with like ADHD, autistics seem to really like just the simplicity of this app and how it just lays out the structure of their day is just you can get notifications too. So it has all those facilities to really just help you go through your day more easily with less unexpected, right? And that helps anyone in that situation where they just feel overwhelmed by events might find this useful.
Can we squeeze in the fact that what would you recommend for people that have lots of projects and tasks to do?
Yeah, so for people who really have a lot, like one of these busy lives with a million things on the go, there's a thing called Things. It's an app called Things 3. There's probably going to be a higher version at some point soon. And that is basically, it lets you build up, organize your life into different projects that can have steps to completion. And it keeps track of all that once you put it in and puts what you need to do today in your inbox. So it kind of helps you organize all these big things. It's made for organizing life, right? So you can give different areas. Maybe you have church, work, hobbies, whatever, right? You can categorize all that, projects for someday when you have time. And you just keep track of all those things. And it kind of keeps things flowing and organized and makes it very simple to sort of keep track of all the different balls you have in the air kind of thing.
Nice. Mike, how much is it? We're just about out of time.
Yeah, that one is $13.99, and it's not a subscription. It's a one-time payment. So it's a good deal for if you need that kind of backup, that kind of help in the calendar. I use Fantastical as my main driver for a calendar and reminders combination. So
awesome.
If you need something more than that, go with Things if you really need to organize a lot.
Mike Fair joins us every Thursday to talk audio entertainment and tech right here on Kelly and Rumya. Mike, we'll talk to you next week. And folks, up next on the program, is there a right or wrong way for doctors to break bad news? Well, we're going to dive into that with our bestie from the UK, Fern Lullum. She's here in 2 minutes.
Stick around and learn something new. Kelly and Rumya return with more in a moment.
My co-host for the program, Rumya Muthan, if she feels better, she'll be taking part in a wonderful event going on this weekend. The 2023 Parasport Games are upon us, ladies and gentlemen. They're taking place in Durham, Ontario, and on this week's episode of The Neutral Zone, they're going to be joined by James Titmarsh and Don Terry to talk about the event as part of the organizing committee. From their perspective, we'll find out quite a bit. Now, remember, ladies and gentlemen, The Neutral Zone airs Tuesday at 11 a.m. on AMI Audio and is also available as a YouTube video podcast. I think this guy here, Brock, he might know a little bit about that, as Brock Richardson joins me hosting on the program today.
Yes, I do. That is my baby, and I enjoy doing The Neutral Zone every week. And something else I enjoy doing when I get the opportunity is talk to our bestie from the UK. And oh, look at that. I get to do that today. Let's bring on Fern Lullum.
What's on your mind? I'm Fern Lullum from the UK, and whether serious, silly, or somewhere in between, I've got you covered. Let's face it, the most effective therapy is a chat with your bestie.
Hello, Fern. How are you?
Hello. It's lovely to talk to you. I'm doing very well. All the better for being here, of course.
Yes. Well, today we're talking about a deeper kind of topic, and that is getting and receiving bad news from people in the medical profession.
Yes, that's right. I think for a lot of us who have disabilities, it can be really hard because you have these checkups and you have to go to hospital and you're really hoping that you're going to get good news every time. But our conditions are often very unpredictable. And when you get bad news, the way it's delivered can make all the difference to you.
Yes, and that's the real truth of it. And the unfortunate part about it is we still hear of some in the medical profession whose communication skills are a little subpar, and that they can make some bad situation even worse. Is this the case in the UK still as well?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I've heard of a couple of stories lately that have been quite shocking to me. So there was one man that I heard of on the radio who said that in three generations of his family, he was given very bad news about sight loss in a much less than kind of way than you would want it to be given. So the first one was his mum, and he said that his mum was told when she was losing her sight that she wouldn't be able to work, she wouldn't be able to do anything, and basically she was going to have a very empty life and not be able to accomplish anything because of her sight loss. So as you can imagine, that's devastating to hear. And then with him and his mum were told that he should be sterilized when he came of age so that he didn't pass his condition on to anyone else. Goodness. Again, as you can imagine, if you're hoping to have a family and hoping to have grandchildren for his mum, just devastating again. And then thirdly, quite recently during COVID times, his daughter went to a hospital checkup and he was unable to accompany her because obviously the restrictions were in place. And his daughter overheard through doctors talking about her scans that she was going to lose her sight. And so it was an accident. And that's how she found out that she was going to lose her sight. And I've also heard of a lady in the media lately who was just told, you're going to lose your sight. There was no kind of support offered, or it was just very blunt. And as you can imagine, you know, this news is absolutely heartbreaking, can be for a lot of people, and very scary for a lot of people. And just the way it's delivered is just making it 100 times worse.
We've had so many people on our Back to Basics programming when we do the week, and that is probably, Fern, the most common thing that I've heard. I have a massage therapist, and he has mentioned that when he was told that he was going blind, the next thing is, well, we'll talk about this at your next appointment. It was just like that. Yeah. He had no guidance except for when he got home and a policeman pulled in behind him and said, you know, the doctor's office called and said that you shouldn't be driving. And he said, would have been nice if someone told me that and figured out how I was going to get home. These are terrible stories. They're just horrible. And it just goes to show that having good medical knowledge just isn't enough. You need to be able to communicate, as I just mentioned, in some kind of supportive way. But Fern, how can we make it happen?
Well, I think there's a few parts to this. I think one of them is education. We hear of so much training that medical professionals have to go through. And of course, the physical side is very important. You know, nobody wants to go into surgery with a surgeon who hasn't concentrated on that physical side. But I think equally as important in some cases, especially when it comes to things like sight loss, is that communication. You know, how are you communicating with your patient? What's your patient care like? And really emphasizing that. And another part of that, I think, is empathy. So putting yourself in your patient's shoes. You know, I know for myself, there's things like simulation glasses and just ways of kind of putting yourself in that situation so that you really know on an emotional level how that feels. And then the other thing, like you touched on there, Kelly, I think, is just the signposting, you know, to say there is support available, whether that be a charity for sight loss or whether that maybe be a counselling service where someone can go and get that emotional support that they so desperately need at that time.
And speaking of counselling, you spoke about that in your last segment, but how do you think it might help in a situation where you've just had bad news around sight loss?
Well, I think a massive part of what counselling does is it gives you a space, a safe space, where you can talk about how you feel. And I think that is something that we need when we're in those situations, is just to process our emotions and our thoughts and our feelings and everything that's going on inside of us. And of course, you've got your family and you've got your friends, and hopefully they're supportive. But I think it's hard for them as well. You know, if they've got a personal connection to you, they're going through it as well, they might be upset. And from, you know, the patient's point of view, yourself, when you're going through it, you might feel like, I don't want to make them feel worse. I feel guilty about saying how I feel and how upset this is making me, because maybe they'll feel bad about that. And so there's all of these emotions there. So what counseling does is it just offers this neutral space with somebody who isn't personally connected to it, where you can just be really open and honest with yourself about how you feel about it all.
It's tough because family members are hit by the trauma, as you mentioned, and we all react differently to to things, whether they happen to us or somebody else, and are what we would consider, I support it, but sometimes I support it is, I don't really want to talk about it, let's change the subject, or just move on, or doting over somebody, because, oh, you poor, oh my good, and crying more to where you're helping them get through your vision loss. And these things are so tough. And I think, to be fair, we do have to acknowledge, Fern, I would assume, that bad news can't be hidden from patients.
No, of course. And that's certainly not what I'm saying. I want to make that very clear, is that we need honesty. You know, the last thing you would want is for doctors to know something about your site that they're not telling you. So it's not about sugarcoating it. It's not about beating around the bush. But at the same time, you can be honest and you can be very clear with somebody, but there's still a certain way that you can deliver that with understanding and empathy, like I said before. And I do think a big part of delivering bad news is helping your patient to understand what's going on, because for so many of us, the questions that it brings up is, what is this going to mean for me? What, you know, what does this look like down the road? Am I going to have more surgery? And so it is being very clear about what this means, but also just allowing them to know that you realize that they're a human being and they're going to have a life outside of this hospital when they go home. And just having that connection and that relationship with them can make bad news just that little bit more bearable.
Absolutely. So Fern, have you had personal experience of getting bad news in an unprofessional way?
Yeah, I have, both myself and my family. So when I was 6 weeks old and my parents first got my diagnosis of aniridia, my mum and dad, they were both told then that I would never be able to see and that they needed to kind of shelter me, hide me away from the world, keep me in a dark room. And as you can imagine, it's said so bluntly in those terms, yeah, it's devastating for new parents. You know, they've got this vision of the future for their child and all this hope and dreams that they want their child to achieve things, and just for it to be sort of sprung on them. And of course, let's be honest, that didn't actually happen in the end, luckily, in my situation. And then when I was older and I was going through glaucoma, which is kind of associated to my condition, I was sent to a doctor for a second opinion, and she very much was of the assumption, well, you're going to lose your sight, so how can we make it as pain-free as possible? And I was not going under that assumption. You know, I hadn't been told that you're definitely going to lose your sight, by no means, by my consultant. In fact, my consultant was saying things like, I'll be able to help you to gain a bit more of your sight back at the time. So again, it just hit me like a train. It came completely out of the blue. And it was incredibly scary for me, because all of a sudden, I'm just thinking, I don't know where I am with this now. What's going on here?
What happens to me now? So in that example where you got the bad news as an adult, try and explain that impact that it had on you.
I was devastated. I just remember being very upset, crying a lot. I think something for me personally is I hide my emotions quite often. So I probably didn't tell the doctor at the time how that made me feel, but I certainly walked out of that appointment with my mum and dad and had a good sob and just felt helpless and hopeless. And has my consultant not been telling me stuff all this time? You know, has he been lying to me? Just completely overwhelmed by so many different emotions and just feeling completely lost.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about the bad experience. And with that, there's, you know, a lot of people who in the medical profession who are great communicators. And hopefully you've experienced that too.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely have. So my consultant is called Samir Hamada, and he is a wonderful communicator. He has always just made me feel like a human being, which I think is so important when it comes to patient care. You know, as soon as you walk in the room, he'll ask, how is your job doing? And how are things outside of you know, your kind of sight loss? And that means everything, because it's just that understanding that you have a life, you have things going on outside of these four hospital walls. And anytime that he's given me any news, good or bad, he's always given me the space to ask anything that I want to ask. So I think that's a big one where, you know, in some situations you feel like, I have all these questions, but if I ask them, I'm going to be made to feel stupid or like I, you know, I should know this stuff or I shouldn't be asking these questions. And he has never made me feel like that. He has always given me the impression that he wants me to be completely convinced that I understand the situation, and he has never shied away from answering anything. And it just, it builds that connection and that bond with your doctor. This is somebody that you're trusting with so much, with your sight. It just means everything.
And when Absolutely. You get that great connection, when it comes to that support that you just talked about, we should recognize it and reward it. Have you been able to do that?
Yes, I absolutely have. And it was wonderful. So a few years ago, there, the Queen Victoria Hospital, where I go to see Mr. Hamada, they do awards. So various different awards for doctors. And there was one award called the Patient Award, which is basically you nominate, the patients will nominate a doctor that they feel deserves the award for patient care, which I was very encouraged to see that they acknowledge that patient care is a big thing and it should be acknowledged. And I nominated my consultant, and I went along to this award ceremony, and it was so lovely, and we sort of had dinner together and everything, and then in the end he ended up winning the award, and they read out the little sort of thing that I put together saying why he deserved it. And I got to go up with him and collect the award. And he said, you know, of all the awards that are given out at this ceremony, this is for me the most important one because it's about the patient and the patient is the most important person.
Fantastic. Fern, you always bring us great stuff and stuff that we can walk away with and learn from. Thank you so much for another great topic. And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Have a lovely show.
Fern Lalim joins us every other Thursday for the UK Highlights.
Coming up next, we've got The Buzz, Bill Shackleton. He arrives. Stand by for him.
Keep it here for more of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV.
Welcome back to the program. Brock Richardson sitting in for Ramya Muthan. You know, it's wonderful, Brock, to see you getting an opportunity to be in here, to see your work while Muthan, well, pretends to be sick or whatever is going on. I really love having you in here with us. But you know what? One of my favorite things to do, Brock, when we do this show, is to watch people work.
Yes. And you know, and you're going to laugh at me because we've talked about this before, but you know what this reminds me of doing when I go down to downtown Toronto and watch the Family Feud Canada recordings? When you hear the cues from, you know, the control room, it's very similar to the same thing. So I'm very accustomed to the cues, and it's been a lot of fun, and we have lots of show left, but it's definitely new and something different. So very
cool. Since you're there about 35 episodes a season, you know, sitting there, I'm sure some people have probably spotted you, those who can see, and have like, hey, well, look at that guy down. He seems to be there all the time. And folks, I'll tell you from my experience, he is. But going back to people working, here's a hardworking fellow. You know, as a matter of fact, Diesel joins us here and talks every Wednesday through Friday about items he pulls out, and we get a chance to talk. Billy Shackleton. Is that right? Diesel, right? That was the nickname they had for you at school because you just barreled over everyone like the old jumbo jet you were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, and people stay down too. They don't.
They knew.
They don't. Yeah, they don't get back up. Not that
there
easily.
Was, oh, that's what you meant. I thought they just died for cover. Oh, you meant they just got trundled over. Oh, yeah. I remember being downtown, and I'd stand there and I'd hear this. A white cane coming, and I'd flatten against the wall. It was somebody, and when he'd go trucking by, that cane, your shins weren't safe. And there were some of those people who, and Billy, I'm sure you've known the odd one or two, that wield a white cane like some kind of, like either an axe, or they're going through the woods, you know, cutting their way through with a machete, or I think a machete is probably a better example, and they're just cutting their way through, but you knew, what's that noise? Oh, and flatten out against the wall. As they'd go by. You're experiencing that sometimes, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Have you been one of those people that did that, especially when you were annoyed and angry and running down a road dieseling?
Yeah, I've actually busted a couple of canes on a sidewalk a couple of times when I got mad. If I got lost or something like that, and it has happened.
Good heavens, man. Oh, then yeah, what do you do? How happened. Do you get home?
I carry a spare.
Oh,
awesome. There you go. I love it.
There's prep. You know, there's somebody who knows his temper. Wow. Awesome.
Preparedness. I love it.
I'm prepared to get lost. I'm prepared for my own anger, and I'm prepared to destroy this. That's like those baseball players that strike out and go to the dugout and snap the bat. Cow,
on purpose.
Willie.
On purpose. Yeah.
There's a whole rack full, and they order these special bats now. Billy, they got all that money. Sir, where are we starting today?
We're going to do this one, actually. Apple and Google stores get thumbs down from the White House.
Oh.
So basically, the Biden administration has convened the Competition Council in an effort to lower prices and promote competition. This report actually says that Apple and Google are stifling competition by charging exorbitant prices for consumers for their products, and for people to put apps on the App Store and Google Play Store, they charge a lot of money for other developers to do that. So basically, they're going to figure out a way, and I don't know how they're going to do this. They're going to figure out a way of perhaps lowering the prices or lower the competition field, the playing field. Go ahead.
Mike Fair was speaking about apps that need a lot of development and consistency, and they need to be kept up because that's just the way it works and what you're paying for. So you think about, well, gee, that's not a bad price if it's something valuable to you that you're able to use. How do you feel about this bill? Because where my concern is, there's already enough things that we need to fiddle around with to make them fully accessible for our needs. And if these developers are working on it, and when we hear any of them say, yeah, I've got to make this suitable for voiceover, that's a win-win. And are we? I mean, overall, we overpay for everything here, right? Especially our services when it comes to cell service and all that. I wish governments here would look more into that. But, I mean, I hear Biden. I hear what they're saying. They're right. But then as a person with a disability, Billy, this is a concern to me because I don't want what happened with Twitter. Well, then just get rid of that accessibility department. We can't afford it.
Mm. Yeah, and one of the things about apps, though, is that, they're free for a reason. And I think the developers, if they lowered the prices, the developers could maybe spend more time developing apps. You know what I mean? Because right now, your app is only as good as if it's free. There's a reason, and that is it's not updated. And a lot of developers cannot afford to update the apps if they have to pay so much money to get them advertised on the App Store and Google Play.
And that's the scary part.
Yeah.
Because they're paying Android, Apple is got to take their cut because they're allowing the platform for these developers, Brock, to be able to get their app on it.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, too, that bugs me is I'm not going to say oftentimes, that's not fair. Sometimes you'll hear, to make things more accessible, it's more expensive. And so why do we do that? Well, you're missing out on it.
Same thing with proper food, right? Oh, yeah, but that organic or that food that's good for you and that locally grown, it's more expensive.
Yeah, right? And that's not fair to the people that need that more expensive. Again, you talk about groceries. There are people that need organic just due to dietary restrictions, right? Like there are people that need these products no matter what the cost is, and they can't just pick and choose. Oh, well, I'll get it anyway, even if it's inaccessible. Well, that doesn't work for everybody.
I wonder what the solution will be, Bill.
As I say, I don't know. I mean, government's been after big, we've all been after big tech It's a report, and like most reports that you see, is it going to be sitting in someone's drawer? Is it going to be a secret document? Is it going to be found by some teenager that we talked about yesterday? I don't know what they're going to do with this, or if they can do anything.
Billy, or is it going to be taken seriously? Period.
Yeah, that's
why. Well, are they just?
But we know the governments in question Google, Apple are not their friends anyway, because the government's worrying most about how little in taxes they're paying and how they're dodging it all the time, Brock.
Right. And that's the thing. And it's all about how can I cut corners to make this better for my pocket lines versus what may be better for the community.
Yeah.
You know,
Bill, that's it, Bill, on that one. Or do you want to move on to your next one?
I think we better move on to this one. We go to ancient Egypt to this one. How to make a mummy. Ancient Egypt workshop has new clues.
I love it.
Yeah. This is also from the Associated Press. So as you know, for thousands of years, the ancient Egyptians have mummified their dead in the hopes of eternal life. The problem researchers have had is they've never really known. They've known it can be done, but they don't know what chemicals they actually use to do it.
Right.
So there's a new workshop that was discovered, it was 2,000 years old. And the interesting thing is there are jars with chemicals in it that actually used.
Mm. Wow. This was unearthed. Yeah. When you said workshop at first, for a moment, I thought you meant, we're going to teach people how to do this. Gotcha. This is the actual genuine article workshop from mummification times.
Yeah, they're calling it a mummy workshop. You know, basically, if they've taken samples from the jars and the labels to make sure that's what's actually in the jars themselves. And then their next step is to see if the samples were actually used in the mummies. So it just gives them a better idea of how the mummification process works, and it's amazing how these people did these things.
Yes, I'd love to know what those chemicals are.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's amazing, and how they made them. Like, that's the other thing is, like, how do you? A lot of these chemicals came from far abroad, and how did they get them? I mean, there's so much we don't know.
With so much less understanding too, like they you know, compared to all the research you could do now, but back then they didn't know. It was just kind of like,
no,
you know let's see what happens, you know.
Well, and you wonder, you know, now we know about all the things in the past, that things that we use or don't use due to their danger and the people who have to work with them, other things that they've been able to adapt when it comes to embalming. But you really wonder, you know, were you basically spicing and pickling someone at the time with what they had available to them? It really would be fascinating when they can pull that apart and tell you what things were used with certainty. What was the secret ingredient hidden in the sauce, Billy? Like, that's just amazing. Wow.
I guess so.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. Sir, a couple of minutes. Let's see if we can squeeze something else.
We can squeeze this. Basically, Ireland is getting a new holiday. Basically, it's a woman that's going to be honored, the first woman to be given holiday status, if you want to put it that way. St. Bridget of Kildare is a contemporary of St. Patrick. And, you know, St. Patrick has gotten all the parades and the attention and all the drinking and so on. So St. Bridget is... You might call her, I wouldn't call her feminist, but she is a woman, of course, and she is promoting different things. She's promoting peacemaking and the environment, and I think it symbolizes what we're all trying to promote today, which I think is why she's being honored.
Yeah.
Because
I absolutely love this. I love this. I think it's great.
So the holiday was... I believe on February 1st, and I don't know how they're going to celebrate it. It said prayers, but I don't know. But I kind of like the idea that she is, promoting things that we do, that we want to promote.
I love the idea when we talk about people in the past, very ahead of their time. And that's what you're hearing here, right? Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. When you talk about the environment, and we might sit back and say, well, it's a no-brainer that, but we had a different time then, different things going on in our world, and they may have led to same issues of concerns, of problems for the environment going forward, but really nice. Brock, what do you like so much about this?
I just think it's promoting, you know, environment. It's promoting something good, you know, that's what the intention of holidays are. And I think sometimes people can take holidays for granted, and, you know, it's a day off work, which might ultimately happen here, but I just think it's really well done, and I love it.
Well, awesome. They promote what the, and they know, you know, you're not promoting drinking, and people forget about the parades, and they forget that there's another side to some of these things. And I think that's what this woman is trying to do, is say, is this holiday is going to be promoting a more gentle holiday, and you know, more reflective of, you know, to what's going on today.
Certainly a holistic viewpoint.
Yeah.
Billy, thanks a lot. Diesel, will catch you tomorrow when you return to the program.
Catch you guys later.
We call it the buzz. We never know where he's going to go. He brings a few items to talk about. Bill Shackleton, he'll be back tomorrow for the next edition. Coming up in the next hour of the program, Hands of Fire is a group of blind and partially sighted sculptors in Toronto. We learn about their recent endeavors when Douglas Freed, the vice president, joins us. This week on the Roundtable, we're joined by Greg David, communications specialist here at AMI. But up next, what can you make for your special someone this Valentine's Day? Foodie. Mary Mammoliti has the answer.
Keep it here for more of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV.
Join me every couple weeks for the Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther podcast, where we learn about outdoor tech and tips. Plus, we look at news affecting the environment. AMI's Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther is available from your favorite podcast provider.